I'm reading about liberalism and nuclear energy.
I want to put that as the cold open. What are you doing right now? I'm reading about liberalism and nuclear energy, Captain.
Wind, water, hot, go planet!
By your powers combined, I am Captain Planet!
Captain Planet!
Welcome to Gaia's Gang. We're on to episode 5, Deadly Ransom. And thanks for, you know, tuning in week after week, you few but faithful. I'm Ariel Van Cleve, joined by
Andrew McCardell
and
Emily Smith.
All right. And thank you, seriously, again, you guys, for listening. We really do appreciate it. And for everybody who's said nice things about us.
Yeah, say more of that. Do more.
Yeah, do more. Never stop doing it. Tell your friends. We're trying to, like, do, like, world domination here is what we're going for.
Mm-hmm. I looked like I had something to say.
Yes, sure you did.
But it didn't quite get there. It's going to be something about rating us or ranking us. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, we were ready to give you the floor and everything. That's why there was that dramatic pause. All right. So we are doing Deadly Ransom in just a moment. But first, Andrew, what's the whole point of this podcast in the first place? Can you remind us again?
Yeah, we rewatch episodes of Captain Planet, reminisce about our childhoods and the issues of the 80s, 90s and beyond, and re-raise the issues that
That's
come up
right.
in the cartoon.
That's what we do. And let's do just a quick recap of the last episode, which was Scum Lord. Scum Lord. I think I have like a permanent block on anything that's like verminous scum or something. Maybe that's my issue.
And because I love him so much.
Right. That I just like, I'll just leave it to you.
All right. In a rebound episode from a downer of episode 3, Scumlord involves first the Planeteers traveling to South America. They're going to visit a shaman that Mati, I guess, studied under. I don't know. It's like a mentor type figure.
Or he's just like a dude that he knows, that, like in his village or something.
And Wheeler's being a shithead in the forest, and he gets bit by fire ants, and he's complaining, and he's mocking Mati, but then Mati heals him. And anyway, they get to the shaman, they meet him briefly, and then eco-emergency, verminous scum is poisoning water with something called rat rot. Rat rot, we find out quickly, turns people into rats like verminous scum, who aren't just rats now, they are also basically his slaves.
Yeah.
So he's plotting to, it seems, poison the water supply of metropolitan areas in South America to create, I don't know, a planet-wide army of zombie rats that will follow him around. That's what he's doing. So the Planeteers, Lord, what even happens in this episode? The Planeteers, they summon Captain Planet. He gets sprayed with some rat rot. A few of them, as they're trying to go shut down Scum's operations, get caught and get turned into rats.
Right.
So Mati and Kwame have to rescue them, take them back. They discover that the shaman has the cure for rat rot.
He held the cure all along.
He had it all along in this rare plant in the rainforest. And after they cure the Planeteers, they need to cure this whole like city that's been poisoned by verminous scum. But they need a whole bunch of this plant, and the plant is being devastated by deforestation activities in the rainforest. Luckily, Captain Planet stops the deforesters. he's recovered from his rat rot injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses the shaman's abilities and what looks like a giant super soaker on his back to create a, no kidding, purple rain cloud
purple
of a
rain.
Cure over the affected areas to turn people back into regular people who are no longer zombie slaves of verminous scum.
Bada bing. That's where we ended it. And we were also told in the Planeteer Alert to be careful with our paper use and use double use. What was it? Paper or something? It was nonsense. It wasn't a very strong Planeteer Alert, but basically it was just saying recycle.
But if you haven't listened to our episode 4,
please,
we get into it.
Please do.
Yeah, we get into it.
Because we decided that there were some issues that they could have addressed, but they did not.
You know what? A thing we didn't talk about is the fact that there's more paper usage in Seattle now because we're all paper straws. We're off plastic. We're on to paper.
Not everybody. There's also compostable.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've seen more compostable ones than I have seen the paper.
It's true because they melt.
Yeah, which
we
is
had some
one problem.
Bamboo straws last night.
You know what, though? I've noticed this.
I'm sorry. We
bamboo straws.
We did this whole part.
Nope. But staying in.
Go ahead, sir.
So when like the compostable straws though, I went to a place where I always would go and get like a pineapple green tea, mm-hmm. and it's delicious. And they have it in a plastic cup with a plastic straw. Like that's always what mm-hmm. they served it to me with for to go. I went back to this place after the straw ban, and it was a compostable cup and a compostable straw, and it did not taste the same. It did not taste the same.
Yeah, this affects how things taste.
And I think that, like, it was a shock to me. Like, I'm not going to, like, never get it again. But I wasn't anticipating that, and I wish that it was something that had been communicated prior so that I wouldn't have been so... Because, I mean, this was weeks ago, and I'm still talking about
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So clearly it shook me.
I think that seals should have to endure getting plastic straws up their noses if compostable just straws shade. Are going to fuck up our drink.
Shade. He's like coming at you. Coming at you hot.
No.
Oh, he was serious. Oh, no.
I don't want my drinks to taste weird. I'm on Ariel's side.
Like, I feel I'm kind of conflicted about it because I...
What?
I'm fully... You guys. I'm full... I mean, like, look... No. I'm not going to say that I would prefer to have like, you know, an ocean filled with straws. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. Like, I think that there needs to be an option then. Like, if there's a compostable straw and I know that it's going to make things taste funny, then I'm not going to really want to have the compostable straw. I'll go strawless completely. Mm. Like, that's what I'm going for.
That's something I heard on the radio. And that was the idea. We just need to reframe how we think of cold drinks. It's kind of a cultural phenomenon that we imagine cold drinks taste better with a straw.
Right.
Oh, I don't even like straws.
That's true.
But I mean, I don't necessarily like straws.
I love straws.
But they wind up in your drink and then you're using it and then it's fine. But I've gone to places where I've just been drinking out of a glass, and yeah. I've not had a problem.
The best solution I've heard is you keep them on the side for people who request them or need them.
Right.
I like it. But you don't presumptively get a straw.
Right. Like every place is still like, you know, you go to a bar and you order a drink, they're going to toss a straw in there because mm-hmm. it's muscle memory for them. It's not a big thing. But then, mm-hmm. and then you don't think about it, and then you take a drink and you're like, compostable. I'd rather just go without. But then you've got a straw there. And is there a place that's able for me to just run over and throw it into the compost bin? There's a lot of things.
A lot of things.
I'm not against, like, plastic straw ban. I don't care. Go ahead and go for it. It's not enough to where I'm going to be like, God damn it. But I wasn't ready for the change to the flavor of drinks. And I think it was a double whammy for this one in particular because
you were so excited about it.
I was so excited about it, and I know that drink so well, and then it was compostable cup and compostable straw.
I believe
double
that.
Whammy.
I have a friend who is probably listening to this podcast who thinks that beer tastes different if you drink it straight out of an aluminum can.
It does.
I don't think so. You agree with that?
If you drink a Rainier, we're gonna try this. If you drink a Rainier yep.
If we ever finish this episode, since we haven't talked about it yet.
We're going to get to it. So if you drink a Rainier draft mm-hmm. and then you drink a Rainier can, there's a difference.
But could that be because draft beer is inherently a little bit different?
So like, is your friend just saying going from a can and putting it into
yes,
a glass?
Exactly. Which that's bullshit, right? That's
I don't go with that.
All right.
I don't go with that.
I agree with you. I think draft beer does taste different.
And I prefer Rainier out of a can and not on draft.
Oh, I'll take it however it comes.
You know what I don't want, though, is a fucking compostable straw in there.
Oh, hell no.
And
right,
we're back.
Back to deadly ransom, people.
So in this episode, Deadly Ransom, episode 5, we are introduced to two new baddies.
Three, sort of.
Two, mm-hmm. Let's say two and a half.
Yeah.
And their names are escaping me right now.
All right. I got this. I'm pretty excited about these villains.
I know you are.
All right. So we have, I'm going to go in like reverse order of my excitement level.
Mm-hmm.
So first we have a computer sidekick of the main villain. Mm-hmm. The computer is Mal. Now that's all caps, M-A-L. And Mal, I believe, I didn't do any research on this, but I think it's pretty self-evident. Mal is sort of based on Hal, the evil computer from 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Yes, yes. It looks a little bit like Max Headroom or something.
And that, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also very sweet. Like Hal was obviously just like the red light, but mm-hmm. Yeah, he sort of has the Max Headroom sort of.
Emily's
we're doing an like, Emily check.
I don't know what's going on.
Can
but
you describe
there was
Max Headroom?
Computer.
This is like a computer generated well, like head thing.
Yeah, but it's like was it? It was like a it was a show, wasn't it? Like
I think so.
Yeah,
a television show. Yeah, called, what Max well, Headroom?
Max Headroom, but he was sort of like a generated thing. Are you? We're googling Max yeah. Headroom.
Looking at a picture. Sure, looks like that.
Yeah, his fictional artificial intelligence character. Known for his wit and stuttering, distorted and electronically right. sampled voice. Yeah, so this guy kind of looked...
That was like late 80s, right? That's when that was...
I think that's right. Started in 1984.
Oh,
dang. But yeah, this was even like a lesser form, just like green lines on the computer screen, Max Headroom style thing.
Yeah.
But I really liked the callback to 2001. And Mal had that sort of... Like Hal in 2001 was sort of dry and, you know, detached.
Mm-hmm.
Mal was kind of the same when he was constantly fucking with one of the other villains. Mm-hmm. Duke Nukem.
That's right.
Not the video game character. Now, I believe that this character just barely predates the original Duke Nukem video game character. Totally different thing. This is a guy who is...
It's a video game character?
Yeah. It's like a... Duke Nukem started out as like a side-scrolling... action platform game and then became like a 3D shooter kind of like Doom down the road, but there have been a bunch of them, but this is like different.
Okay.
This guy is yellow and scaly and has a red mohawk and is like a mutant. He has radioactive energy and he is voiced, Duke Nukem is voiced by Dean Stockwell, who's an actor of Quantum Leap fame.
I love that show.
Yeah. So and he'd been an actor for a long time by then. He was big in Quantum Leap. I think he got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame right around this time. This was the height of his fame, in keeping with Jeff Goldblum, Whoopi Goldberg, others that have been on this show. And then our main villain from this episode is Dr. Blight, voiced by Meg Ryan.
Meg Ryan is a voice on Captain Planet.
And she is at the height of her, well, nearing the height of her Meg Ryan-ness and fame. So again, this is 1990,
mm-hmm.
right, or 91, 90. So she's already been in Top Gun. She's been in Innerspace. Awesome movie.
Such a good movie.
Dennis Quaid.
And Martin Short.
She was in When Harry Met Sally the year before this cartoon started.
Well, I think that that's kind of like height of Meg Ryan then, because wasn't that the thing that like shot her into something or no?
Yeah, and I heard that the scene where she fakes the orgasm in the restaurant is actually what got her this role on the children's cartoon.
They were like, book
somebody
her.
Confirm that. She was in Joe vs. the Volcano in 1990, same as this year. Played three roles in Joe vs. the Volcano. That's a cool movie. I like that movie.
She was three roles in that?
Yeah, because she's like one of his coworkers in like the depressing, like horrible place. I think she plays like three different people.
Oh.
Maybe two of them are sisters.
Oh.
But
I haven't seen that movie in forever.
Like, he goes from like thing to thing and there's always a Meg Ryan and she's a different person each time, I think.
I've got a whole lot of movies I have to watch now.
So far, the only one I've seen is When Harry Met Sally.
You never saw Joe versus the Volcano?
No.
The Brain Cloud? That's a good movie.
Nope.
And then Prelude to a Kiss was a couple of years after that. Sleepless in Seattle was 1993.
I saw that one too.
French Kiss a couple of years after that. City of Angels a couple of years after that. So you've got Mail. I feel like 1998 was like maybe apex Meg Ryan.
Yeah, peak. Total.
Was it the third? It was the third of her, because her three movies with Tom Hanks were Joe versus the Volcano, Sleepless in Seattle, and then You've Got Mail.
Yep.
Right? So
weren't they in another one? Or am I making that up?
Oh, maybe.
Doesn't matter. It was much after this, but at least we have her sandwiched in here, in as a voice of a Captain Planet baddie.
Yeah, Dr. Blight. She's like
she is a like
killing it
serious.
In this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so they come across these baddies, and the thing is, like, Duke Nukem and Dr. Blight, they are gunning for Captain Planet. Like, they've decided that he is a problem. We are five episodes into Captain Planet being a thing, and now it's gotten to the point in this world where all the bad actors are saying this guy is a fucking nightmare and we have to get rid of him. And the Planeteers are a known quantity at this point too, and everyone's just sort of accepted it now. And there's no conversation, there's nothing, there's no check-in, like the flight simulation thing from the last episode where Mati was saying the last time he had actually tried to do some crazy maneuvers and the geo nonsense thing was like during the flight simulator training. And so they're still very fresh in this world, but they're also acting like it's old hat, which is weird.
Yeah, and we don't know how much time has passed, but it doesn't. There are cues in the show that suggest it really isn't very much.
No.
And we're going to find out in this episode that Dr. Blight's whole plan revolves around Captain Planet. She's not doing, right, like Hoggish Greedley or Verminous Scum style, devastate the planet, and the Planeteers have to intervene to stop that separate thing from happening. Her plan is Captain Planet.
Right. Her plan is to destroy him, which also is a different thing from what we have been experiencing, because this kind of makes it more of an action cartoon as opposed to this environmental bent, which is what we've been dealing with before. There's kind of a bad guy we have to go after and figure out a way to solve the problem, the eco-emergency. And then once the eco-emergency is solved, thanks to the kids and also Captain Planet, then we can go on and say, hey, you can prevent this from happening by doing X, Y, and Z. In this case, it's like, we want this guy gone, and the whole episode is focused on, let's just fuck up everything that we can so that Captain Planet is no more, which is not what we've been doing.
No.
Up until this point.
And again, like the temporal question that I have is, when did she start planning?
Right.
After Captain Planet has emerged, as he comes onto the scene and he's this thing, and there's this new, like, earth shaking, like Superman level entity at play. She has this elaborate Antarctica based laboratory scheme going on.
Mm-hmm.
What was she doing before? She was going to make a plot around Captain Planet. I don't know. But now she's focused on him.
This is, you know, this is why I like to see women in STEM. Just
hell yeah.
They're at the top of her field.
She's moving swooping fast. In with one of the greatest responses I've ever heard. This is why I like seeing women in STEM.
Doing good work. I mean, in this case, it's bad work, right? But
she's doing it so good.
But she's doing it super well. She's doing it better. All of the other enemies, what do we call those?
The eco-villains?
Yeah, the other eco-villains. Mm-hmm. They've got small potatoes plans.
Well, and she's not even necessarily like an eco-villain. She's just a villain.
Well, she does say, whatever, we're going to get into it, but her plan is to capture Captain Planet, figure out where he gets his power, and then use it to destroy the planet.
Right, but again, like, that's not necessarily like eco. It's just like she's bad. Right. Like, she is full-on evil. There's nothing that she's going to, like, she just wants to destroy everything. And then what?
And I'd like to know, I'm curious to find out what drives her. Does she have a plan for surviving this cataclysm that she's going to cause?
That's the thing.
Or not?
Does she already have a planet for herself, like separately, that she can just escape to? Because she's going to destroy all life. And then she's just going to have Mal, which is, you know, seems to be fine for her. Because they have some weird flirty things going
on.
They've
got a banter, her and the computer, yeah.
It's flirting.
Well, and I think she likes, because Duke Nukem is kind of a pawn in this whole scheme.
Totally.
Like, she's using him, and Duke Nukem is very threatened by Mal, the computer, because Mal is constantly shit-talking him and giving him a hard time.
And also,
Duke Nukem has a hard time with that.
And, like, Duke Nukem is one of the usual eco-villains. Like, he loves toxic waste and wants to just, you know, be bathed in it and covered in
it. He's the one wearing the Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's a yellow mutant with a red mohawk wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
That's right.
Who emits, like, nuclear radiation.
Yes.
Is this the first time? The first time we've met him.
Yeah, he's
he
new.
Can
Everybody's
zap.
New.
He zaps it. Like, he zaps it out.
Oh, he sure does.
Which is interesting. But okay.
He's not the sharpest tool.
No.
We'll get into it.
No. But so the note that I have written here after my whole thing about like how this episode is different than the last four that we've watched is Wheeler is putting us all in danger. And I'm not sure why I wrote that. Something about him being stupid.
They're getting their Hope Island briefing, which is normal. But then instead of Gaia, who starts to explain there's something weird in Antarctica, like with the lights or something shining,
right,
it gets hacked by Nukem and Blight. And they're basically like, we have a bomb, a nuclear waste bomb that we're going to set off if you don't come stop us.
Mm-hmm.
So they're using that as bait to get Captain Planet. So Wheeler, they go to Antarctica and Wheeler melts some ice and then Gee reforms the liquid water into something. And then, you know, they have some success and Wheeler makes some crack about it being a cool move. Mm-hmm. And then Link is kind of pissed at him. She's like, you shouldn't joke at a serious time like this. I was like, their relationship is...
Well, I have some things to say as we get further into the episode. But so they're showing on the Synergy screen that, like, if this bomb goes off, like, everything, then there will be blight. Everything will be ruined. Everything's going to be destroyed. All living everything will be gone. So as soon as we get to that point, it's like, Evelie's doodling.
I'm just listening. Honestly, I don't know what happened in this episode. I have a note about the Hawaiian shirt. I have... Yeah. I'm catching up.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Whilst doodling. So then they realize, okay, well, we have to go check this stuff out. So then they get there and they go directly into the trap. Like, it was the perfect trap and they just walked right into it.
Oh, these dumbasses.
Yeah. It took no effort for them just to be like, oh, yep, eco emergency, same old, same old. And then... they got trapped into a force field when they finally got to the place where the bomb was. And then they were like, oh no, their timer's still running. The bomb might go off. Let's summon Captain Planet. So then they did. Idiots. Still not realizing they've fallen for a trap. Then Captain Planet shows up and he's like, oh, hey, kids, let's just do this and everything will be fine.
The timer is counting down. They think this planet-devastating bomb is about to go off. It's seconds away from going off. Yeah. And he's just, like, yucking it up with the kids trapped in the force field.
Because that's what he's always doing.
Then turns around and flips a switch, which is all it takes to stop the bomb. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think he even says, in the proud tradition of Captain Planet, terrible quips, says, I don't mean to be flip, but... And then he flips the fucking the switch that stops the bomb.
When he showed up, he God said, damn it. Looks like you've got an explosive situation on your hands.
But all of that works in a hilarious way in this context because you know that he's about to get nailed right. by Dr. Blight. So, like, he's being a smartass and grinning and
right, like, just
whatever.
Being Captain Planet all over the place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so then he's... Like, he smashes the thing that's creating the force field that's yeah. trapping the kids.
Kids
and then,
get out.
While they're, like, shooting the shit after he's stopped the bomb.
And they're all like, high five, high five.
Springs the real trap.
Uh-huh.
But I had a problem with this because what she does is basically drop the floor out from under Captain Planet and he falls right. into a shaft.
Right.
He can fly.
Well, he does try.
Well, he starts to, but, like, I don't understand. Like, as soon as... I don't... It just...
There was smog or something that came in.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like he should have fallen as far as he did. It looks like he fell several stories before he was like, oh, I guess I better fly my way out of here. And as soon as he starts to, then she poisons him
well,
and he falls down.
To be fair, like, you have to think on your feet real quickly all of a sudden if you're dropped through a shaft of some kind. Like, even if you're Captain Planet, you're going to have, you know, a little bit of time to, like, react.
But, like, if I stumble on the
That's
street,
true.
As soon as I stumble, I'm, like, reacting... I mean, with depending on the scenario, maybe some success, maybe not all that much success. But I'm reacting right away.
He demonstrated that for us here in the studio, like his cat-like reflexes about how he would catch himself when he stumbles on the street.
Well, I mean, I think it's a little bit different though. When like you're like stumbling on the street is one thing. But when you're, like, standing there just, like, yucking it up with the kiddos, and then all of a sudden just the floor opens out from underneath you, and then you're going to drop. You're, like, just dead weight. You're going to drop. And then, like, he did move pretty quickly, but then it was too late because then she closed it and then filled the thing with probably pollution of some kind.
Yeah. Also, I was thinking maybe he was, like, those fainting goats that get startled and they... They can't even stand up.
That would be a real weakness that the eco-villains could exploit. It's like, oh, you just gotta, like, startle him a little bit and he'll just pass right out. Like those dumbass goats.
Just falls over.
What kind of goats are those?
I don't know.
I don't know. They're funny.
Are they the same goats that, like, sing Taylor Swift?
No, I think that's a different goat.
Different species.
Let me, yeah. Check how many species of goats there
yeah.
are.
So... While you're Googling that.
All right, so he gets trapped.
He gets gassed. He gets some sort of pollutant that, like, takes away his power, so he really can't even... Because if he could have gotten enough power, he would have just, like, fucking rammed through.
Yeah, or just taking himself back to the rings, right? I mean, he could have just said, "Power is yours," and gone back to the rings.
But doesn't he have to be
trapped?
But he was trapped. But he could have, like, if he had his power, he could have shot through and then gone back to the rings.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
he didn't.
We've seen him smash and bend
metal.
So she immediately weakens him. It's a pretty good plan. I still have an issue with the gravity thing, but that's fine. I can get past it.
Drops him into a glass jar. A glass jar, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, and then Nukem hits him with the radiation, which weakens him.
Yes, really zaps him.
So
that's a real problem. Mm-hmm. That's a real kick in the head.
He's kind of in a snow globe. He's in a nuclear snow globe.
Yeah, and I think that, like, Dr. Blight made some sort of, said some sort of quote about, the spider, something.
She dropped a little poetry on us. She said, "Welcome to my parlor," said the spider to the fly.
That's right.
Which is like, all right.
Yeah. Again, she really is just hell-bent on Captain Planet no longer being around. And it didn't take long for her to apparently get annoyed with him and then come up with this plan. It must be some sort of true evil genius.
Yeah.
So with a lot of resources.
So her whole thing is she wants Captain Planet because she's going to, like, dissect him.
Yes.
To ascertain the source of his power so that she can use that. Duke Nukem's demand, the ransom demand that they issue, the deadly ransom demand that they issue to the Planeteers is that he wants a, quote, lifetime supply of nuclear waste.
Right.
A lifetime supply of something. I've tried to not say as much as we did in the first episode, something is a very 90s thing. But if they're just the concept of a lifetime supply of something.
That's true.
Rings right to the heart of my fucking childhood.
And yeah.
Like, how much is that, man? How much do you need?
Right.
You could just say pounds.
How do you calculate or barrels. That? A lifetime supply.
Plus, when they bring the lifetime supply, where do you put it? It's really not that much. It's really not that much.
He says it would be enough to keep him fed for 100 years.
He doesn't know what he's saying.
But it's 5 barrels.
That's true. I once, as a kid, I got some pretzels. The whole bag was burnt. Couldn't eat them. They weren't good. And I, being the activist kid that I was, I wrote a letter. Do something about it, you know? And the company sent me, like, a whole box of pretzels, which at the time I remember being like, it's a lifetime supply of pretzels. I think it was probably just like 10 bags of pretzels. But
right.
That's a
goodly
pretzels.
Amount.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good on them for making it right.
Mm-hmm. Do something about it, you know?
Once I, similar token, less exciting result, discovered an error in a Trivial Pursuit question in a game that I had bought. And I confirmed it was wrong in the way that I thought it was wrong. And I wrote the company an email, a polite email.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't ranting and raving. It was just like, listen, other people are going to notice this. It's something you might want to correct or address.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't hear for 3 or 4 weeks. Figured it was just gone. They weren't going to respond. They eventually did respond. Said, thank you for your enthusiasm about the game. We don't adjust the game based on user like feedback or something. Which is A, hilarious. Probably a good policy. I imagine they get a lot of, you know, whatever.
A lot of like, pardon me.
Nonetheless, I was a little bit miffed because this is not like...
I mean, it was an error.
Yeah. They screwed up. They flipped a couple of constitutional amendments in a way that they should... Doesn't matter.
But it does. You wrote a letter.
It's good. Letters matter. I saw some data last week about how to political... what do you call these elected officials? how it's gone up really in this particular period of political activism. They show that how the average elected, the congressmen or senators have received a lot more email, and so that is exciting. And then the other part of this research was asking, like, staffers in the each office, like, how many pieces of mail or emails do you have to get before it kind of raises your alarm bells? And so the numbers are kind of increasing, so we need more now to make a difference. But one of the interesting points was that you need just one or two letters from an important, semi-important person, so like a leader in your community or something. And so this was, anyway, the people we were talking with, this was kind of a different way of making a difference. So not, well, at least in my case, not me writing a letter, but finding someone a little more important to jump on the cause and write a letter or make a phone call.
Nice. Well, great.
I'm letter writing.
I think everybody should write letters. I just wrote a letter to the editor and I wound up in a newspaper. So
about what?
About WCBU in Peoria, potentially closing down.
Oh.
And I didn't want them to, so I wrote a letter to the president of Bradley University.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Good work. See, look, make your voices heard, people. This is the story here. Do all of our listeners have a good letter writing campaign story? Did you get some pretzels? Did you save a radio station? Did you stop the nuclear waste?
Oh, yeah. Let us know.
Yeah, tell us. In questions, comments, and concerns, we'll add that to the next episode. All right, so we've got Captain Planet in a glass jar at this point. And now I've written, you guys are idiots, where is Gaia? As I'm talking to the Planeteers, I'm sure, in my little note here.
Was that when they were fighting?
I think that they were trying to break into the lair or something.
They're trying to locate it, right? And they use some sort of scanner on their geocruiser to see, like, oh, there's lab equipment inside this glacier.
Well, and I think that what was going on, I think when they were back up on the roof and they were trying to, like, break into the where Captain Planet had, like, fallen through, and they were just, like, hitting it a lot as though that was going to be helpful. And I was like, why doesn't Gaia just show up and, like, know what's going on? You know, she's monitoring. Like, she needs to also be helpful.
Yeah.
She's rarely helpful. Rarely. So that's annoying me.
Mm-hmm.
But then she does appear eventually, and she's like, oh, so things aren't going well. Curious. Oh, you guys were, this is like a whole trap, wasn't it? So they were able to track down her other lair, which just so happens to also be in a mountain. And she has a lot of infrastructure.
Yeah.
In a lot of different places.
It's really elaborate. And I thought it was funny. I don't know if the timing on this works out, but at some point, they're talking about what to do about the situation, and they have the ransom demand of a lifetime supply of nuclear waste. And Linka says right away, well, we should just give it to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, a couple things about that. Mm-hmm. First of all, yeah, they've got Captain Planet. We'll just negotiate immediately with these eco-terrorists.
Right.
But second of all, where does she think are they just going to go get it?
Yeah, they're just going to, like, wander down to where? And be like, hey guys, what we're looking for is a lifetime supply. I don't worry about what we're going to use it for. Just hand it over.
Yeah. I don't think Gaia has it on Hope Island.
No, I don't think Gaia has much except for just like lush forests and palaces and whatever the hell else she's got going on over there and synergy screens. So yeah, they are like willing to sort of do this. And everybody else was like, no, cool it, man. Like we have to rescue him. We can't negotiate with terrorists. And then she kind of backed off a little bit, but I think she still kind of just wanted to hand it over. So then they do head back. They find it. They go to the other lair and they're trying to break in. They're like, well, we'll just chip away at it. And Wheeler is like, has a pickaxe and he's just hammering away at a door that there's no way that's going to have any effect.
Yeah.
So then Mal unleashes an avalanche. Yeah. On the kids. Here's my question. When you have powers such as water, wind, earth, and fire, don't you want to use those powers instead of trying to like outrun an avalanche on skis? Like their option, what they were just like, they got on their skis.
They were very good at skiing, which I would just like to say is very impressive, particularly given several of them grew up in a tropical climate.
Right.
And or Brooklyn.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Instead of using, like, wind to push the avalanche away or kick it up somewhere else or whatever, or turn it into just, like, burn it up, whatever. That could be an option, maybe. I don't know how that...
Create a chasm.
Create just, like, a spot in the earth, but no. Let's just out-ski an avalanche, which
is...
It was
pretty cool.
It was very cool, but dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It was dangerous. So, again, I wrote, use your powers, you idiots.
Oh, yeah, so they're all master skiers. They escape... The idiots escape the avalanche. And then Linka and Wheeler start fighting and blaming each other for their failures to this point. And also, maybe even the team more broadly.
Another little note here I wrote, Wheeler and Linka, just fuck already.
No, it's clearly it's more of a sibling kind of situation, Ariel.
I don't think so.
They almost made out in Thailand.
I know, but mom stopped, like, popped in and yelled at them. Gaia's like, now.
Yeah, no, I know. So they got yelled at. They got yelled at by, like, we have to not, you know, blame each other for all this shit. Like, it's not any one person's fault. We're all just tense, basically, is what she's like. So we're all just tense. Let's just take a step back here and cool it.
Oh, you guys, they couldn't use their powers against the avalanche because Captain Planet is manifest and trapped. They don't have any powers
when
Captain
right.
Planet exists. Oh, oof.
Okay.
That would have been embarrassing.
All right, well, good. Then I will rescind my use your powers, you idiots comment.
Cross that out.
No, just... I was thinking the exact same thing, though.
But that's a good point. I have to remember that.
So they have to work together.
They are powerless. Without right, they have a different kind of power mm-hmm. when Captain Planet's around. And it should be Captain Planet, but right now he's in a glass jar.
And Gaia has to remind them to work together.
Yeah, because they lose all function.
Yes.
Apparently.
They would. Now, if it was my mom, she would have made us sit on the couch and hold hands for 10 minutes. That was our punishment for fighting, which I think mom was particularly twisted.
That's sadism.
Sit down and hold hands for 10 minutes?
Yeah, after amazing. Fighting.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Love each other. We'll write in. We'll let Gaia know this parenting tip.
That's what she needs, more parenting tips from us. So then they decide, let's go ahead and just do this lifetime supply of waste. Like, let's decide to do that. And they fly in and they have 5 barrels full. And apparently that's a lifetime supply.
Yeah.
And I think I was just like, that's not enough. That can't be enough.
Actually,
it's awfully
no,
convenient.
This is. yeah. I thought this was a good point that you didn't need very much nuclear waste because it's super efficient. There's a lot of energy in a single atom.
And even just a little bit of nuclear waste could potentially be devastating.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It's
well,
compact.
Then that's a fair point, and I'll take that.
Wheeler, when
we're
he...
just.
When
poking holes in your theory.
When Wheeler radios into Blight to be like, okay, you win. We're gonna, after the avalanche, we're just going to give you the nuclear waste.
Fine.
He says it in a way that he might as well have just been like, psych, at the end of it.
Right, right. Because basically,
not a great sell.
It was psych at mm-hmm. the end of it. And yet they still fell for it because then, like, the plane took off and there was a laser that was trying to zap it out of the air.
It did.
And then they were like, oh, gotcha, totally nailed it. And then the plane fell and they were like, suck it, Planeteers, you're dead.
They think
now.
That they just murdered the Planeteers.
They're like, you guys are fucking dead and we did it. We did it. And they're all very proud of themselves. Not so fast. Turns out Planeteers are in the fucking barrels the whole time.
I like that.
So they Trojan horse.
Psych!
They Trojan horse Dr. Blade.
Yes.
That's I missed a lot of stuff in the middle, but I came to with the popping out of the canisters.
Which I think is one of my favorite things they've done on the show so far.
Yes. Very clever.
But the kids, it's clever, but then they get there and they pop out. They're still powerless.
Yeah.
They're still just like 5 kids in this lab where there's a mutant with nuclear energy, a woman in a lead suit. We haven't mentioned that Dr. Blight is wearing because Duke Nukem is just this like walking nuclear radioactive source of devastation.
Yeah.
They say right away at the beginning of the episode that Blight is wearing a lead suit. But it's like a form-fitting.
It's like a cat suit.
Yeah.
They say she's wearing a designer. designer lead suit.
Yeah, a designer lead cat suit.
I felt very conflicted on this point because on one hand, as I mentioned, I was very excited to see a female scientist.
Mm-hmm.
This is exciting and remind me of the fact that, I mean, in kids, there's this famous study from the 80s where like 5,000 kids are asked to draw a scientist and not a single, like, less than 1% of kids drew a female scientist.
Hmm.
And so they've repeated this study over time and it's gotten better and better. Yet still only it's like 30% of kids draw a scientist as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyhow, this is a whole thing about how scientists aren't portrayed as, are generally portrayed as being men. So I was very excited to see this, to see Mal be a female scientist, but then she's wearing a pink suit.
Yep.
And it's a cat suit, as you say. It's a cat suit that's very, she has a seductive look and body shape, I would say.
Well,
very
and she
Barbie-esque.
Also was accentuating that as like at the very top when yep. she was explaining that it was a designer suit, and she was like just strutting her stuff a little bit and showing, yep. and frankly, showing off her ass.
Yeah, there was just a lot of booty in it.
Yep.
Big shoulder plumes, which are
yep.
interestingly back in again. And I shouldn't wear them myself, but I think they're kind of fun. Anyways, but so I just didn't know how to feel about this. Like, on one hand, was it good that the female scientist was portrayed as being feminine and not like an ugly
right.
old cat lady with a neon mustache? I like, maybe. Or
but then like, did they go,
it was
they
so
go too
extreme.
Far
extreme mm-hmm. yeah, she was rather sexualized mm-hmm. and wearing a pink suit, and so
plus she sort of had
great about that.
Like, I mean, Meg Ryan doesn't necessarily, if she was just talking as Meg Ryan, I don't think her voice would have been quite as, like, there was a little bit of a seductiveness
yes.
even to her voicing for this
high
character,
sing-songy
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
etc.
yeah. So a little bit of
exactly
going on.
Yeah. So I felt confused how I felt as a scientist and feminist myself. I'm not sure what to do with this designer pink suit.
All valid points. Again, she's just walking in here and having great points and then back to doodling.
Crushing it.
So the one thing I did like, though, is that the kids were being very resourceful. Mm-hmm. Because of the lead lids for the barrels, they were able to use them as shields to block
Newcomb's rays.
Exactly. So that was cool.
And again, they kind of did like a version of like, you're hitting yourself
yep.
with Duke Nukem. He just keeps shooting his waves of energy at them. They keep deflecting them very easily
yep.
with the lids from the barrels that they smuggled in.
Yep.
And they keep rebounding and hitting Duke himself or around him. And it seems to be harming him, which is
yeah
weird. But he just keeps shooting it, keeps getting hit until eventually like incapacitates himself.
Right, because he's like, if I just get the right angle. But no, man, these kids are up to your tricks and they know what's going on, and they want to survive now. They don't want to die in this lair, basically. Who could blame them? So they're able to rescue Captain Planet.
Oh, there's something else.
But like, wasn't there, but he was like out of the jar and he was like laying on this table and he was strapped in, which also had like a weird connotation to it as well. Like, there's just a lot of stuff.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I do remember.
Take the bait.
I remember. Again, this is, I felt
conflicted. Did you feel things when you saw Captain Planet?
Oh, dirty.
Helpless.
The Mal was her name?
No, Mal is the computer.
Dr. Blight.
Dr. Blight is Meg Ryan.
Dr. Blight. Yes. So she's still around, right? While Captain Planet is strapped to the table, and she's like, I don't know, dragging her finger along his arm in a kind of seductive way. And again, this is, this doesn't pass the Bledel test. I don't think where you have, does it, are there? Well, I guess the Planeteers are, in fact, female and talking to each other.
Well, yeah, but they're also all talking about Captain Planet, so.
Yeah, and I don't think you would have to have a conversation between Guy, Linka, or Dr. Blight just with each other, and I don't think they ever talked to each other about something other than Captain Blight.
Yeah, I just, again, I don't love it when the smart female character mm-hmm. is maybe seducing. That's
mm-hmm.
again, she also has the world domination plan, so that's is empowering.
I know,
but I didn't
right.
love the that
mm-mm.
seductress mm-mm. moment of
no.
of Captain Planet strapped to the table.
So I was like, this is an odd wave. Okay. fine, move on as quickly as possible. So
okay, what happens?
I'm really holding back.
I know you are.
keep it up. Keep it up, sir.
I see the look in your eyes.
No, like, I just thought it was weird that his erection was that large.
I mean, now basically.
It's NC-17.
Like, there was just, it was just weird. It was just a weird little scene that was going on.
I think you
can
say erection on just, like, an ordinary.
That's a medical term.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's fair. But luckily, nothing happened. Nothing untoward happened. And they were able to release Captain Planet, but then he was still very weak. So he had to go get power from the sun and also from the air around him. And as Mati said, good friends cheering for him. That's the other part that he needs to get all of his powers back.
Positive energy.
Yeah, which yeah. That was
a nice
cute.
Message.
That was
cute.
Says,
let's make like an atom and split.
Wheeler.
Liz Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
Very clever. No, you didn't like that? That's smart humor.
It's fine. I think I would like it better if it was coming from anybody but Wheeler.
Well, wow. Wheeler has to be, you know, he's doing like do some make him up stuff from the rest of the episode because he was just sort of he's just been a jackass nonstop. Yeah. So make like an Adam and Split, you're kind of like, yeah, okay. There are worse things you've done. But when Captain Planet gets all of his energy back, then he becomes water and he like zaps into Mal.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite part was how Dr. Blight described this happening. And she said that Captain Planet was, he's entering Mal.
Yep.
That's
exactly what she said.
That.
Oh, yeah.
I just noticed that Mal also had a little pun because he's short-circuiting. Yeah.
I'm all washed up, he said. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cleverness, like so much cleverness. Like you're in a situation where there's like danger, anything could go wrong at any time, and yet you can't help with the one-liners and the puns. You just can't help yourself.
I like it.
The actor who voiced Mal was good too, and I looked him up quickly. He was in the movie Time Bandits and a few other things.
Yeah.
But
that's a good movie.
His name is David Rappaport.
Okay.
I think he passed away not terribly long after the show debuted, but but he was very good.
Yes, and he was all washed up. So they were able to rescue Captain Planet. He destroyed the computer, which was like a real bummer for Dr. Blight. What happened to Dr. Blight?
I think she just escaped.
She just got out?
Oh, she might be back.
She'll be back. Well, because like there's some weird stuff that they have to, you know, that cat suit. I just don't know.
Thank God she didn't try to play the French Open in that. Boom. Did I get the right tennis match?
Yep.
You did.
Very topical. That's good.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Could have been a real controversial issue. So then what we learn is that radioactive waste from nuclear power plants is bad. That's what we learn in this episode.
Yeah. They're kind of like... They treat it like a necessary thing, but then say, you know, use less energy, a message that we've seen before.
Right.
Turn off the lights, you're not using them, et cetera, et cetera, so that we have to use less of it seemed to be the message.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty terse Planeteer alert.
Yeah, because I think there wasn't really much of a message throughout the show anyway, because like we said kind of at the top, it's just like full-on cartoon this time. Like just action adventure cartoon, as opposed to there's a greater burden that we need to work on and figure out how we can address it.
Yeah, I almost wonder, because they could have done this episode without Duke Nukem at all.
Yeah.
Like you can pretty easily imagine Blight pretends to have a bomb without his help. She doesn't need his help for that. I guess she kind of needs him to hold Captain Planet hostage. After he's captured, he gets zapped with the radiation and that
couldn't
kind of like immobilizes him. But it seems like she had that handle on her own.
Well, and couldn't she have just like figured out her own radioactive zapper to take care of him or disabled him in some other way?
Yeah, it seems like they thought they needed him because he was the one demanding the nuclear waste as payment. And she didn't
lifetime
really need
supply
that.
Of
she just wanted
waste.
Captain Planet.
So. Right. So I think maybe he was the like shoehorned character so that they can have the Planeteer alert at the end. Mm-hmm. But I mean, otherwise it just would have been a straightforward show.
Yeah. as always, the power is yours. I like that message. I think that's nice. Energy efficiency. Yeah, I didn't know what to do with the nuclear waste bit myself, because this is, while nuclear waste is obviously a problem of environmental concern, there's, on the flip side, it's actually quite clean in terms of energy. It's considered zero emissions, I think. And so this is a complicated issue. And a lot of folks argue that liberals, environmentalists should embrace nuclear power as an alternative. And so I think that's true on the environmental side. It's, of course, also very dangerous for human health.
Wasn't there just, like, around this time, or, I mean, it was pretty somewhat recent, like, just a meltdown of a nuclear power plant somewhere that caused problems, or, like, the threat of one?
It's
like Chernobyl.
That was the 80s, right? When was the Three Mile Island disaster? Was that the 70s?
Might have been the 70s.
So it might have been on people's minds, like, the consequences of some sort of, you know, there's sort of security risks associated with them.
Right.
I mean, if they're operating ordinarily, they create waste and that's bad and you have to treat it properly. But absent something like that, I think the West Wing also dealt with this. They had like a fictionalized like near meltdown in a California plant. And there's the same sort of considerations like, oh, you know, are the benefits of its cleanliness, do they outweigh the risks and the waste associated?
Right. And I think because of what it is and how little people know about it, makes it an easy thing to call attention to as far as a threat is concerned. Because, like, I don't know much about nuclear power or how it works or how a plant is able to generate or what they do with the waste that comes from it.
I mean, Homer Simpson was able to run one for going on, 40 plus years now?
Right.
Can't be
was
that hard.
Was there ever a meltdown?
And in the Springfield plant that he works at? I think he might have almost caused one once.
Right, I remember that. I don't know if there's like an actual
one. There was a scare.
Yeah. Right,
Are there environmental effects of it?
I feel like
I think there's like three-eyed fish in.
Yeah. Like, I think because like things leach out. I think that was the other concern. Like things leaching out. And then if there's a meltdown, then if something might get and contaminate something else. And then what does that mean for all of us?
Yeah.
But I think it's just like vague enough where it can become a threat like this of like, well, there's some bad stuff that goes along with it.
I mean, it's definitely dangerous for human health. It's just a matter of, I think it's this whole risk analysis is complicated because it's an extreme outcome. And so humans tend to overweight the risk of something when the consequence is really dire, like Chernobyl, for example. So maybe that's the issue. I don't know. I'm now inspired to do more reading, to have a firmer opinion about nuclear energy.
Yeah. Which I think, you know, that can be the message from this episode, is like, try to understand more about potential energy sources. If somebody comes at you and says, well, you know, nuclear power really is the way, then you can say, well, it's complicated and here's why, or whatever. But at least doing a little more research. And then also, while you're at it, look into other sources of energy to see what's better or worse than that.
There's a book called Hard Green, which I read, I don't know, now 15 years ago. But it's a conservative manifesto about why liberals should embrace nuclear energy. In part. So that's the reference I can provide. I'll get you some more details, folks. I know you're clamoring for reading resources on this topic.
Who wouldn't be? Andrew, do you have something to add?
Oh, I was just doing some Googling around some of these more recent nuclear disasters. So Three Mile Island was in 79, Chernobyl was in 86, and then the Fukushima disaster, which I had almost forgotten about.
Oh my God, that's right.
Terrible. It was in 2011 in Japan. And that was prompted, and I guess this goes to like these sort of like consequences.
But that was because of the tsunami
an earthquake.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things where these things are vulnerable potentially as security risks. If they are compromised, then there are grave consequences that flow from that. But otherwise, these accidents seem to be awfully rare.
Right, but they're just. But it's one of those things where it's just. It's the threat. If you can find the threat and stick to the threat, and they are rather large noticeable, visible things. So you want to, as a person, just stick to the negative shit. And on that point...
we should, that should be our first t-shirt. Guy is gang. Stick to the negative shit.
As always, the power is yours.
All right, we're going to wrap this episode up, and we'll be back with episode 6 in, you know, the coming weeks.
Second quarter 2019.
Yeah, that sounds about right. All right, until then, bye-bye.
Bye.